This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education After School. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as always, by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
We have a very interesting episode coming up because we've actually got a question about another mum coming up.
Ooh.
And her butting in on her kid's sex life.
Ooh.
Yeah. And we've got one about how to give sexual feedback nicely. So that's all coming up. If you'd like to get your question into us for mum and I to answer, mostly mum because she's the actual accredited sexual relationship therapist, you can send them in using the Google form, which is linked in the bio of this episode, and our social media channels. We're at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok and X.
Formerly known as Twitter.
Wonderful. Exactly. Mum, people might not realise this, but we actually haven't spoken for a while. It's through the magic of editing and all that sort of stuff. We haven't spoken for a while. You've been on holiday. How was your holiday?
I saw lots of penguins.
That's good. That's good. We love those in this parish.
Yeah. So that was good. I asked them what they thought. I did take lots of film of penguins having sex. So that was quite interesting because there's quite an interesting courtship ritual. And I took lots of pictures. I can forward them to you so you can put them on the show page if you like.
Actually having sex?
Yeah.
Wow.
They were doing the different bits. And then the final bit is where they're sort of lying down.
So, am I allowed to broadcast that on our Instagram?
Well, you can just put stages 1 to 3 if you don't want to put the final part.
Yes. Bases 1, 2, 3,
somebody,
and 4.
I heard somebody say, oh, I don't want to stay here. They're not doing anything. I'm going to the shop.
Mm.
I stayed for a long time though, and I looked, and they were doing a lot, and there was a lot of sex going on. Just saying.
Regular listeners of the show will be like, every time that mum goes on holiday, something to do with animals and sex comes up. Now, that's going to sound worse than it is. Yeah, because remember last time when you went to China? So this time you've gone to South
Africa. Oh, the pandas!
And what...
The panda porn! Oh
Thank
my God!
You.
The
mum
learned
about panda porn, which go back. We've got an episode all on panda porn. You can go and find that. So we've got pandas and people, humans making porn for pandas. And now you've gone to South Africa and you're watching the stages of penguins shag one another.
Yeah, on Boulder's Beach.
Now, I have to ask this question. Are you planning this? Because at this point, it's more than a coincidence. It's becoming...
Well,
something.
No,
to...
it's happened twice. That's not, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are other things. But I mean, it was, I mean, come on. It was, I also saw a lion shagging or two lions shagging.
Okay, mum, shut. I think now you need to be very quiet and very careful about what you say. Because, like you said before, twice was a coincidence. You've just mentioned the lion shagging, and I'm now worried this is becoming more than a coincidence.
They're animals. They can't help themselves. They do what nature intends.
Your Honour, they do what nature intends.
Then there was my near miss at joining the Mile High Club.
What? What's this?
Well, we had this very full plane, and I ended up sitting between two manspreaders.
Ah, I know the type. Yeah.
Okay, so one of them, the one by the window on my right, was crying a lot. And he said to me, I can't fit my headphones into the hole. Can I put them in your hole? So I put them in my hole.
And that's, yeah.
And they this wasn't the bit. And I said, look, it fits in my hole, so it must fit in your hole. So I put it in his hole. And he said, it's loose, though. I said, it was loose in my hole. So we had this sort of long conversation with everyone around us looking over the top of the seats going, what's going on here? So I was like, shh, I'm watching Barbie.
And I'm watching Animal Shag.
Anyway, the man on the other side had 4 double whiskies, took a load of pills and fell asleep. So I had to get up to go to the loo. I couldn't wake him. I was shaking him. He wouldn't wake up. So I climbed over him And he just moved his arm and I fell into his very lumpy lap. Yeah. And screamed the place down, jumped out, ran away. And then I tried to get back to my seat. And I couldn't wake him. I couldn't get in. He'd moved in a way that I couldn't climb over him. I couldn't do anything. I was just stuck. So I went into the galley and said to the air crew, I said, I can't get back into my seat. So then this guy comes along with a torch and says, right, you've got to climb over him. So I start trying to climb over him because he wouldn't wake up. And he pushed me. He sort of was pushing my bum so I'd climb over. Same thing happened again. Fell on him. But this time he didn't wake up at all. And I was just like in my seat with my legs in the air over the seat in front with the man next to me crying and the other one snoring. And it was just the most horrific experience. Everybody laughing their heads off. Woken up the entire bloody plane, everyone laughing their heads off. It was awful.
God.
Yeah.
So that's what you're saying is when you slipped, you almost joined the Mile High Club. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
If we're to imagine our mind's eye, how...
Had
just
he been
how
naked,
you know. God. Okay.
Which he wasn't.
I want to move as far away from this conversation as possible.
I can't think why.
And with that in mind, shall we get to our first question? Because I think some people would have seen the title of this episode and they'll be looking for endometriosis, not
snakes on a plane.
Why is that funny?
Why we're talking about animals.
Yeah, shagging it, I suppose. You are weird. Okay, here we go. Oh, dear. Okay, here we go.
And I've got to be serious.
Yeah.
Okay, go on then.
Hello.
Hello.
I was diagnosed with endometriosis. Fucking hell. I was diagnosed with endometriosis at 28 years old. The condition has really affected my work life, but also sex life. At work or daily home activities when I'm on my period, I can suffer horrendous cramps and bloating followed by nausea. Me and my partner have really struggled during sexual intercourse before because of pain, so we find different ways of pleasuring ourselves. I'm now 38 and my partner is 42. We have wanted to conceive children for a long time and have been for the last 8 years. We have just started our first round of IVF. What advice could you give to your listeners about IVF and endometriosis? I'm a straight female, age 38, from Manchester, UK.
I'm so sorry you're having such a rotten time. Endometriosis is awful and I really feel for you.
Can you tell me what endometriosis is?
Oh, right. So the lining of the womb, the endometrium, so which is the sort of inner layer, can appear in other parts of the abdomen. It can appear around the peritoneum, the bowel, the kidneys, you know, it can migrate and be all over the place.
In places where it's not supposed to be?
In places where it's not supposed to be, outside the womb, yeah, which can cause all sorts of problems. So when you have your period and bleed, you're going to be bleeding from those places.
Oh, wow.
So it can be horrifically painful. And it can cause things like adhesions where organs stick to one another or tissue sticks to other tissues. So it's really, really painful. There are all sorts of horrible consequences. And it is more difficult to conceive sometimes for some people. So it's a really, really, really unpleasant condition, which is often difficult to diagnose. And women tend to be misunderstood. If you go to the doctor and you say, I've got horrific period pains, they go, yeah, you're a woman. What do you expect? You know, get on with it. You know, don't make a fuss. And it's not like normal period pains. I mean, normal period pains are quite bad enough, I promise you. This is 10 times worse. So really difficult. And often if you've got endometriosis in areas that are around the vagina and cervix and in the rectal area particularly, you know, sex is going to be especially painful because you're going to be hitting those areas. So, and you know, 100% respect to anybody living with that.
Absolutely. And just can I just say as well, so I think to some people they'll hear this and think, wow, yeah, that sounds terrible, like, you know, a horrible thing for those people to have. Well, let me tell you, I've done my own little bits of research on this, and this affects roughly 10% of reproductive age women. That estimates about 190 million people. That is, I believe, that would be, I think, the 8th or 9th largest country in the world, if that was the population of it. And yet, it's something that we don't know about. And you're absolutely right about the time it takes for doctors to find this and locate it and diagnose it. I mean, some places say the average time is 8 or 9 years
yeah.
to diagnose. And yeah. sometimes that is due to the things that you're talking about, where not all doctors, but some will say, okay, are you pregnant? Are you on your period? Are they just a bit bad? Let's prescribe painkillers, blah, 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 blah. And it gets further and further down the line. In this person's case, maybe when you're trying to conceive, you are years down the line and the time has been ticking. So
yeah.
it's really serious. People can have periods for that are longer and more painful. Mm. Some people are having periods 8-9 days a month and they're bleeding the whole time and it feels horrible and they can't concentrate. It's excruciating pain. They have to be admitted to hospital sometimes. It's bad news and it affects so many people.
And it's on a spectrum as well. I mean, for some people it's relatively mild and for other people it's truly horrendous. It just depends where the endometrial tissue's migrated to. It's really difficult. And when this person says their work life has been affected, I'm not at all surprised because I would imagine it's really difficult to concentrate or to work. I mean, people can't always work with it. And sex life, obviously, is painful. Not to mention, you know, if you're bleeding all the time, that doesn't exactly help. I wouldn't say I've got advice about IVF and endometriosis both together, but in terms of endometriosis on its own as a condition, I would say push, advocate for yourself, keep going back to the doctor. If you feel you're in pain, keep going, keep going, keep going. Don't take no for an answer. If somebody offers you something, if somebody says you're going to be referred, check that you have been, keep going back, make a nuisance of yourself, make more nuisance of yourself than you ever have ever before. Don't care. Don't worry about people not liking you. Just make a nuisance because it is a condition where people overlook you. You know, I mean, most women's conditions are like that, but this one particularly. I mean, with things like vulvodynia, where people have very sensitive skin around the vulva, that's an average of 7 years for diagnosis. And you'd think that would be pretty easy, you know, it hurts.
Mm.
But no. As far as IVF is concerned, I think the most important thing is to maintain your intimacy. So usually when you're having IVF, you're told not to have penetrative sex. One, because you can have multiple pregnancies, and two, because they want to know that the IVF has worked. So making love becomes all about getting a pregnancy. And for some people, the importance of getting the pregnancy, of achieving a pregnancy, overrides the outcome, which is a baby. And so people can be really shocked when they're actually confronted with the baby because that hasn't been their focus. Their focus has been getting and maintaining the pregnancy. So that's one thing. Having problems with sex subsequently is really, really, really common. So sex therapists see loads of people who've had IVF. I mean, because it takes all the emphasis away from intimacy, it becomes all about a regime, doing it by the clock, you know, and the whole process is giving yourself injections, you know, having to attend appointments. It's a horrific process for a lot of people. They, you know, it's not enjoyable. If you have a great outcome, that's fantastic, but it's jolly hard work. And so I think, you know, the importance of doing things that aren't about making babies, having lots of cuddles and staying close. Sometimes it's useful to go to a relationship or sex therapist before you start IVF. And I mean, I see lots of people who do that and have some advice on maintaining intimacy and how to keep the relationship alive, because it can really blow it apart. In some areas, there are really good counsellors and therapists in the fertility departments, but in some there's nothing. So, you know, it's hard.
Absolutely. I would recommend people as well go back and listen to our episode on fertility and I suppose infertility as well. We spoke to Gillian Aldridge, who is a fertility sort of specialist and a sex therapist in her own right, and she talked to us loads about that. But also what was interesting and what kind of pertains to what you're saying there as well, we spoke to Ruth Corden, who's James Corden's sister, and her and her husband were having some of the same issues that you were talking about. And after a while, they were like, you know what? We're going to start using condoms again, because almost even when they were being intimate with each other and it wasn't part of the regime and stuff, they were just thinking that, like, they'd still have that thing of like, well, maybe. And that, well, maybe was killing them. And it was actually ruining it. So then they were like, we're going to start using condoms again. And that then made the difference between, okay, what is it for us? When's it this for us? And when is this for when we're trying to have a baby? And it was stuff like, these are incredible, you know, horrible compromises and but scenarios which throw themselves up with IVF and with this sort of scenario. So yeah, definitely worth having a go. And with that, I think she has cultivated as well on her own Instagram page, but just in general, and it's really out there, a big community of people who really want to grow their family. So there, basically, there's also other people out there that you can talk to and converse
connect with.
Yeah, exactly. Can I just say as well, when you were saying that about the endometriosis thing, about push, you know, I got teared up a little bit because, again, reading about this as much as I have, that is just so true. And that is such good advice. And luckily for the person that's written in, it sounds like they've done that and they've been through that process. For the rest of you out there, if anything that you've heard that we've talked about so far, you're like, shit, yeah, that could be me, then hopefully it won't be as long a journey as some other people, but have a real think and take this seriously. Amazing. Yeah. Okay, we've talked about endometriosis, we've talked about animals, we've talked about the Mile High Club. Perhaps we should have a break and we should come back with some questions after this.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Welcome back to The Real Sex Education After School. We've got some more questions that you guys sent in to us. I was talking before about the anonymous Google form you can use, but this person has messaged in on Spotify and they have asked, this one hopefully should be a quick one, what does it mean when I don't like people?
Is that the question?
That's the question.
What does it mean when I don't like people? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I thought that the beauty of this, I thought this could be a pretty open and shut case, this one. I mean, I'd be interested to see your take on it, but I think
what's yours?
You don't like them.
Oh, I see. That's your answer.
That's my answer, yeah. I don't really know. I mean, I just wanted to say thank you so much for writing in. Quick, simple one, this one. It means you don't like them. Wicked. Let's move on to the next question.
It could mean that you're just quite avoidant, you know, that you,
yeah,
or that you expect people to be horrible to you so that you are more reluctant to engage and trust people.
But you're allowed to not like people.
Can't like everyone.
No, exactly. And when you don't like people who you think you should like, it's like, well, maybe unfortunately, you know, you just don't like them. I mean, again, go back and listen to our episode on the three reasons you like someone. And maybe what you're missing is the unconscious fit, the thing that draws us together.
But I don't think this is about a relationship. This sounds like it's somebody who just walks into a room and goes, oh, you can all like fuck you. Off. You know, it's
probably.
You know, yeah. No.
Yeah. What advice do you have for that?
Well, you keep away from people then if you don't like them. But I mean, you know, if you don't like them, you might prefer penguins, you know. But
yeah,
that's always a possibility.
We're getting really dangerous ground here.
We're not talking about sex. We're talking about friendships and interactions. I'm not suggesting sex with a penguin. Of course,
I know.
Don't be ridiculous.
Just need to make sure that people do know that, because we have talked about penguin shagging at least twice today.
Penguins, not humans and penguins. Penguins. Yes. What do you take me for?
I don't know. I don't know. You're the one that goes all the way around the world to see animals shag, not me.
That's not why I go. Okay.
They just happen to be doing it every single time.
If you wait long enough, they'll do it.
And I bet you are there waiting all day and all night.
Yeah, well, I did wait quite a while.
Wonderful. Here we go. Another question here. Hi from London. Me, 16 male, and my girlfriend, 17 female, have started being more sexually explorative recently in our relationship. We've only been dating for about a month and a half, and I know that I have a high sex drive. And given the fact that it's still up to my parents what I do, my mum is completely not okay with what I'm doing and recently seriously told me off, saying my sister, 12 female, could get exposed and traumatized if she walked in on us, and says I'm too young and not mature enough to start having any kind of sexual relations. Is what I'm doing normal, but more importantly, healthy for someone my age, and does it have any negative consequences of me and my partner? Because now I feel really lost. Man, 16, bisexual.
Hmm. Congratulations on having a nice relationship, because it sounds good. But I guess your mum is probably pretty upset that her baby boy is starting to grow up. And that's probably part of her concern. And she may be worried about health issues as well, you know, pregnancy, and sexually transmitted infections, that kind of thing. And as well as the emotional challenges of starting a sexual relationship, they're all very real. So those are things that are considerations. But if it's going okay, then, you know, you can reassure her and try not to get in the way of your little sister. I mean, I can understand her being concerned about that, but I think your little sister's a bit more savvy than, even at 12, than she realises. I mean, it might well traumatise if she walked in on you. You don't want that. But no, if it all feels okay, then if you have a problem, then go and ask your mum for some advice. I'm sure she'll be helpful.
Mm.
And you know, maybe thank her for her concern.
Okay. I really was so sure this would be a pile-in on the mum. And it would be us going, yo, mind your own frigging business, mum. You're such a square.
No, I can understand it.
Well, I bet you bloody can, mum.
Been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. And were you traumatised?
Oh, yeah.
But this is what I mean. We all were. We were all traumatised. This is what I'm talking about. Your 12-year-old sister does not. She's 12. She does not want to walk on you. You do not want her to walk in on you either. So let me tell you, you'll be already trying to make it so that no one walks in on you, whether it be your mum, whether it be your sister. You don't want anyone to walk in on you. So your mum can, I think, chill out a bit about that. What's so nice is that you've clearly told your mum that this is going on. I hope your mum hasn't walked in and found out that way. But you've clearly told her. You're trying to create this open dialogue and your mum's trying to shut it all down. I mean, there's something to be said for being concerned. But you could say to your mum, you'd be like, listen, you can do whatever you're going to do, but be careful. Use a condom, sex transmitted diseases, pregnancy, your sister to think about, me to think about. But, you know, you do you at the end of the day. That would be, but it sounds like to me she's been a bit more dismissive and a bit more, you know, shut downy about the whole thing, trying to shut it all down. And I'm not as pleased with that aspect of it, I have to say. So
he is only 16. I mean, if he's the eldest.
He's 16. He is of age to start having sex and they're consenting 16-year-old.
No. I completely agree. But as I say, it's probably more about my little baby boy being all grown up, if you see what I mean. From her point of view, it's probably quite a shock.
Absolutely.
And also, who tells you how you should behave or what you should do as a parent? Mm. I mean, she might be quite concerned about the girl as well and what her parents will say when they find out, or if they find out. I mean,
that they've been shagging under her roof.
Yeah. I mean, it's a consideration. Yeah. You know, there are all sorts of things to think about here.
That's true. Having not had children myself, maybe that's why I'm so like, oh, piss off, mom. But you are right. Maybe there's things to think about here. But I don't know. I sort of feel like at my school, and follow with me on this, you were allowed mobile phones. At a certain age, you suddenly were allowed mobile phones because it was like, well, there's certain people who need a mobile phone to be able to get home, to be able to call their parents, this sort of thing. However, if a teacher saw you with a mobile phone, it was getting confiscated. I sort of feel like this should be something similar.
Oh, what? Don't ask, don't tell.
I mean, yes, exactly that.
Well, you don't like that
because of the understandable connotations linking it to the American army and the don't ask, don't tell. No, like, you can be gay in the army as long as we don't know about it.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, I think it's probably better to be open about it. I remember
I've been open about it and my mum's told me to, like, go and stop doing it. And that I'm not mature enough.
Yeah, I know, but she's just worried. She's just concerned. Try and understand. Give her a big hug and thank her for her interest. You know, don't worry, mum. I'm being responsible.
I love the words that you've used. You've been like, mum's been like, you're not mature enough. And you just go, thank you for your interest, mum. Come here.
Let's have a nice cuddle. It would work for me.
I'm not your little baby boy anymore. Oh, God, that's so sweet. Is this not parenting upwards, though?
What? Yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Everyone has to manage up.
A couple of weeks ago, we talked about everyone has to manage up. This is so funny. But a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, kids who have mummy issues, and particularly men in particular, and them being parentified by their parents and by their mother. And then they have to play the parent whilst their mother plays the child. Is this not another case of that?
This is managing your mum to get what you want, actually. You know, I mean, we're suckers. You know, you say, oh, thanks, mum. Oh, don't worry, mum. And, you know, I'm still your little boy.
And you
boy.
Lap it
oh,
up.
Oh, don't worry. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just make
oh, my
that.
God. All right. Yeah. I will.
But I can remember once finding with one of my children, whether I got the right one or not, a packet of condoms and a packet of cigarettes. Right. I
Ooh,
found them
yeah.
totally accidentally. I wasn't doing anything like to look. Mm-mm. They just were there. And so I went and said, guess what? I've found things in your bedroom. And this person said, don't you think it's responsible and mature of me to be safe and healthy? And I said, by smoking?
said, and she said, oh, that's what you're annoyed about. Yeah.
Yes. So,
now, that can't have been any siblings of mine. None of them are cool enough to have sex and smoke.
Well, yeah, moving swiftly on, the next question
Okay, let's move on. But also, can you, my friend, 16-year-old bisexual male, please let me know how that goes. Please let me know how it goes when you say to your mum, come, thank you for your interest. Here, let's have a hug. I just want to see how that goes. Okay.
Well, okay, bisexual friend from 16, you can score my advice out of 10 if you like. In fact, everybody can. Why not? And tell me whether you think this is what you should be saying to your mum or not. And how you
Love
think
it.
Your mum would respond if you said that. I'd be very interested to know.
Okay.
Also, mums, please do correspond as well.
Yes, please do. Okay, cool. I will put this all on Spotify so you can type out your responses, but on Instagram as well.
This.
Let us know. You definitely will. Use the hashtag bad mum. Okay, here we go. No. Or great mum. We're not sure. We're not sure what the hashtag is yet. It hasn't started. Okay, hi, Kate and Diggory. Love the podcast and love listening to you on my drive to work. My question is about the etiquette of sexual feedback. I find it easy to give guidance during sex, just like that. Slower, gentle. But occasionally, I have had to break things off with someone purely because of objectively bad sex. In situations like that, is it appropriate to give that kind of feedback? And how would you go about it without sounding like a mole? I don't want to shatter anyone's confidence, but I feel I'm doing a disservice to them and their future partners by not saying something. And the roles reversed, I want to know if I was a shit lay. Woman, 30, straight, Australia, homemade lasagna for dinner.
Well... you obviously don't think you're a shit lay, do you? Because you're very confident about the advice.
I love this person. I love their energy. I think
But
great.
All I'm thinking is, if you made your lasagna and you put it in front of somebody and you said, what do you think of my lasagna? And they said, is this a meat lasagna or a veggie lasagna? Because, you know, I'm veggie. And you said, what? But it's a great lasagna. Eat it up. You know, it's fantastic. It's got a great cheese sauce. It's got wonderful. It's fantastic. Look at those layers. Oh, you know, you'd be really disappointed if they were saying, yeah, but it's not my cup of tea. And I'm thinking you'd think it was a bit harsh. And I think that your appraisal of other people is a bit harsh, to be fair. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to give people a chance. And I have to be honest, if someone was going left a bit, right a bit, gentle, you know, when you'd only just met and stuff, I might be a bit put off and it might affect my performance.
Really? So wow. Coming from you. I thought this would be, you'd be like, well, fair play. That's good. That's good. You know, that's someone taking control of their pleasure. In a way, you know, to guide someone,
I completely
sexual situation.
Agree. I mean, I generally encourage people to take people's hands and show them. But also, but I think sort of barking out, you know, gentle, left a bit, right a bit, like that
she
slower.
She has written gentle in all caps.
Capitals,
which
yeah.
It feels like a juxtaposition there.
With the conversation that we've had lots of times on this podcast.
Gentle!
But is saying, I love it when you do this, or I would love it if you did that. It would be really nice if you did this, rather than left a bit, right a bit. You know, do they feel able to offer the same kind of critique to you? I mean, you obviously think you don't need it, but or maybe you do. I don't know. But I just,
yeah.
I think we've only just met someone as well. It takes time to build up that rapport, to get to know one another's bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, I do advocate taking responsibility for your own sexual experience, but I'm wondering if this might shut down the other person's. So maybe put that gentle into caps and apply it to yourself.
Okay. Just to use your lasagna example. If I was to, let's say, like you're suggesting, meet someone for the first time, I've cooked them this lasagna, it's a meat lasagna, and they've gone, oh, but I'm a vegetarian. I would think they were a lesbian. Firstly, if we're taking the metaphor,
Diggory?
Really,
Diggory?
No. I know what I mean, because what I'm saying is, like, we're looking for different things. Like, they're a vegetarian, I'm a meat eater, I'm straight, they're gay, sort of thing. I'm now talking about the metaphor being bad rather than anything else. Okay, but put that out the window. But in some ways, is that not what you meant? Is that not more an advert for what this person is talking about? Because actually, person going, let me finish, would you please? My word, you are really earning the hashtag right now, mother. Okay.
Let me finish.
Please. Okay, just hear me out for a second.
Go on.
Steady. Hear me out here. Because then when you were ending said relationship, you could say, hey, just to say, one of the reasons why this didn't work in the bedroom is I like this and you do that. And just as a heads up going forwards, that might not be the way for other people. And also, it could just be you're into different things. I'm into veggie food. You're into meat food. I'm into more gentle loving. And you're into, like, trying to flip me over and smack my ass the whole time. So maybe this is actually a good thing.
No, there are compromises, aren't there? I mean, you could say, let's forget lasagna, let's have macaroni cheese. Or,
you've got to be careful here. What are we talking
for
about?
For goodness sake.
No, but please, we can't get too lost in the metaphor here. We need to stop being more on the nose.
What you can do, I mean, it might be that on this occasion, you don't want the vegetarian lasagna, but you'll eat your meat lasagna. You'll do your own thing, for instance. I mean, it might be that you need to do your own thing, and that's what comes of... Why are you making that face?
Because I'm like... I'm making faces because I'm like, okay, I get that we've been using the metaphor, but we then need to actually say what we're talking about, because otherwise people think we are just talking about lasagna. When you say you need to try your own thing, could you give examples, please?
Well, you might want to... You might think, well, I really want to come at this moment. It's not happening. So you masturbate. You know, you might say, okay, if I do that, or you might just do it, you know, why not? Mm. Or you want to break from it, or it might be that you just go with it and you say, well, let's see what it's like next time. Or it might be it's something that you could say afterwards. Oh, you know, I'd really like it if this happened. Or sometimes I like sex to be a bit slower or whatever. You know, there are ways of doing it rather than issuing instructions when you've only just met somebody.
Mm.
I mean, I'm assuming that these are short relationships. They don't sound as if they'd last very long.
No. Is this person gives good sex and wants good sex, and they are moving on quick if they don't get
also,
it.
Also, I feel there's a huge responsibility on straight Australian women to both do lots of really good cooking and also to tell the world how good it is at sex. And actually, you don't have that responsibility. You don't have to do that. You can just move on if you want to with no discussion. But, I mean, it might be, if they're a nice person and it's not just about the sex, it might be that you'd like to be around them because they're fun. And so you make the effort and develop the sex.
So basically what you're saying is, saying just like that, slower, gentle, in the moment, early doors, you're saying maybe you can be a bit more tactful about it. Or use their hand or that sort of thing. So that's fine. But what about when you're breaking up with someone or ending things with someone? Do you think it's okay to give that kind of feedback?
Oh, what would be the reason?
Well, this person said, sometimes I've ended it with people just because they're a shit lay. And maybe I should tell them when I break up with them. Do you think that's...
But, you know, you're saying, I'm doing a disservice to them and their future partners by not telling them they're a shit lay. But, I mean, it may well be that their future partners are all veggie, right? So
this is what I'm saying. That is kind of what I was trying to say earlier, where it's sort of like, okay, this might be for you, but for them and for other people it works. Mm. That's it. So that's why, maybe this is an argument against Because these might be your preferences, particularly we're always told women are all different.
That was
my point.
And they
want different things. Yeah, okay, right. We were arguing the same thing. Right, okay.
If you've been in a relationship for a long time and then you have a different body you're touching, it's really weird. I mean, if you're constantly moving from one body to another, it's not the same. But if you've known one body for a long time and then you're onto a new one, it's very weird. What do you do? There is a lot of, oh, gosh, I'm not sure. Oh, I don't know. I'm used to this. Oh, I'm doing this and my last partner liked it, but this one doesn't. Oh, what am I doing wrong? There's a great deal of trepidation. And there might be anyway with new partners. So people are not always giving their best performance. This is a relatively confident person, I would say. But the people they're with may not be as confident. And it may well shatter their confidence if you're saying, okay, this isn't all right. Or if you said you're a shit lay, it might, them in a box for the next 10 years. So I do think you should take responsibility for your own sexual experience. I do think you should express your needs, but it's how you do it, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But I do like the sound of the lasagna. And I have to say, you know, you're really cool because homemade lasagna is great.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to lie, I feel like I would get on with this person.
Send us a picture.
Send us a picture of the lasagna and let us know how it goes. And it's annoying because I want people to get in touch. Let us know what you think about this as well. Do you think you should, or there is some sort of duty to send people away and tell them how they weren't the best at sex with you?
You could hold up scores, like on
Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah, you could hold up a score, 9, 10. Or...
I'm really sorry. I think your shoulders were a bit tight. And you could have really worked on your feet. Okay, cool. Wonderful, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for another crazy...
Yeah,
that's more like it. There you go. That's more like it. Not the feet thing. I always mention feet. I have to talk about that
some
episode. Anyway, yeah. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Get involved in all the things we've been talking about on Spotify and Instagram and stuff. We're at the RSC Pod everywhere. Make sure you're following, make sure you're subscribing, make sure you're rating us on Apple and Spotify and all those places. Leave us a comment on YouTube. Let's get the conversation started on there as well. We love you very much. We'll see you next episode. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.